We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand, that fine gentleman way over there on the far side of the good old US of A. The one, the only, still the incomparable Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I'm good. Some might argue that you're the one who's way over there, terribly far away from the best coast. But I'm good. I'm good. You know, it's a lot of family time. There's been a lot of rain out here in Southern California, but it's been largely good. I'm always just more worried about my AV setup, which is now on a card table. Literally, here, you can... That's next to the bed that I sleep in. And it's just, it's a different setup with toddlers running around. And look, life is all right. I've been watching some bowl games, been paying attention to some news, excited for, we're recording this with some of the bigger bowl games being yet to be played. So I'm not going to like, oh my God, I can't believe blah, 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 blah. But life is all right. Ty, how you doing?
I'm good. Are you pulling the Michael Barbaro with the pillow fort to get maximum sonic optimization?
I have two pillows directly in front of me, and if you're watching, if you're lucky enough to be on verballers.com and watching the video, I don't have anything soft behind me. There's just some books. I'm literally staying in my middle brother's childhood bedroom, and he's a pilot, and there's a broken wing, just like the Beatles song. There's a broken wingtip, and no, it's a relatively soft room. It's carpeted. There's a bed right here. There's a closet to my left, and it's not the full New York Times treatment, though I have made the audio igloo before, and it's not bad. It's a nice experience.
Well, welcome back to the show. Hope everyone had a good holiday weekend. We are the Solid Verbal. Don't forget to go on out and subscribe and rate and review. You can do that now on both Apple and Spotify, so we would appreciate your support if you do like the show. Also, don't forget to go on out to verballers.com. That is our Patreon, where you can get access to this show, all of our shows early, and last but not least, solidgiveaway.com is where you can go and throw your hat in the ring, throw your name in the hat to get your Desmond Howard signed mini helmet. Dan, Desmond Howard, friend of the podcast, apparently.
Apparently, yeah. I just learned this yesterday. I went on his podcast, and he apparently likes the Solid Verbal. That's pretty cool. I think you hit everything you need to hit.
So here is the deal, Dan. We've got a game today that I'm calling Three Reasons Why. Three Reasons Why for new coaches, okay?
Mm-hmm.
As you know, this is a very active coaching carousel, was it not?
Man, it's going to be a different looking sport in 2022.
We're going to go through one reason why new coaches will work.
It's working! It's working!
One reason why they won't.
You are one pathetic loser.
Whoa!
And then finally, just one burning question as we head into the 2022 season. All right. Does that make sense to you?
I'll do my best. It does.
I was doing a little shimmy there listening to Bruno. Not a sponsor, could be.
You're suggesting that it's on the table that Bruno Mars sponsor the Solid Verbal?
I'm just saying.
Okay.
If he's looking to attract an interesting new demographic.
I'm ready.
LSU. LSU got rid of Coach O. They're bringing in Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly and his family. Give me a reason why it's going to work, Dan.
Brian Kelly, if nothing else, is somebody who wins a lot of games at a lot of places, understands, we presume, what it's like to hire a winning staff, what it's like to instill a, you know, week-to-week winning culture, to weather down moments and, you know, reverse course. He's understands how to put together a staff who can recruit. But with what he's done at, what, Central Michigan and Cincinnati and Notre Dame being a humongous place with humongous pressure, and the ease with which LSU and, you know, any SEC team really, if they're on their game, can geographically go out and sell their program and bring in top flight players to develop into a top flight team. More difficult at Notre Dame given geography and academic restrictions in some cases, but certainly Notre Dame sells itself. But LSU is just different. LSU is a team that has actually won and played for national championships multiple times, whereas Notre Dame couldn't quite get that over that hump and do it as consistently as LSU. Everybody wins one at LSU, and Brian Kelly wins everywhere. So that's the case.
Brian Kelly's won 284 games if you count the 21 that the NCAA vacated back in 2012 and 2013. Everywhere. As you said, Grand yep. Valley State, Central Michigan, Cincinnati, and Notre Dame for the last 12 years. It's notable, I think, Brian Kelly has been a pretty good recruiter, even in that SEC footprint, right? He's recruited mm-hmm. nationally at sure. Notre Dame. It's just something you have to do. He has left every program better than when he found it. And in yep. Notre Dame's case, for the last 5 years, that's been double-digit wins. So I think, yeah, on the surface, as opposed to some of these other hires that we're going to discuss here momentarily, there's a very promising track record with Brian Kelly that you got to feel good about.
He did it largely, and he rebuilt a down Notre Dame program that took over and turned into. So right now you can argue LSU is a down program that needs a lot of elbow grease.
As for one reason why it won't work,
mm-hmm.
I don't believe for a second that it won't. But this is very much a marriage of convenience. And as you said, there are previous coaches, each of the last however many coaches at LSU have won a national championship. That's the one goal here if you're Brian Kelly. It's the one goal if you're LSU. We have seen Brian Kelly in this play before, where he's been on a big stage, either in a playoff or otherwise in a big game, and it has not exactly worked out. Go on over to ND Nation. They'll tell you all about it.
Right.
They've been trying to get rid of Brian Kelly for years because they don't think he performs well on that stage. There's a case to be made, though, that what was holding Notre Dame back was Brian Kelly. So with all that said, now on to the burning question, Dan.
Yeah, I think everything you said, I think, is correct. I think the SEC West is harder than what Notre Dame has scheduled in recent years, by and large, especially with the ACC being down. And the Alabama exists on their schedule and in their division every year. The case against LSU is the blueprint for historic championship football is one of their quote unquote rivals. And that is more difficult than playing a down USC or a random NC State team or occasionally Clemson. It's a more difficult place to meet expectations.
Yeah. I mean, and BK in big games is a work in progress. Let's be honest here. It just is. So SEC West, yeah, we'll see what he's made of. That's why they're paying him the big bucks and they expect him to win. How long of a leash he gets if he doesn't win, and again, I don't think that he won't. Size of said leash, that will be interesting to see.
And he's making a lot of money, so it is a golden diamond encrusted leash. So he will be given time.
What is your burning question about BK at LSU?
What that full staff looks like and what kind of autonomy he has with big decisions, be it with staff, be it with getting rid of staff. We saw Ed Orgeron have a lot of latitude in terms of hiring, firing, making new decisions, quickly cutting the cord when a coordinator isn't working. I assume they're going to invest a lot of money in top flight coordinators, as they have done these past few years, or quote unquote top flight coordinators, if you look back at the Bo Pelini experiment. But yeah, it's what that offense looks like. It's what quarterback looks like. If there was a question at Notre Dame, it was a rotating cast of coordinators who worked to various degrees. He hired Brian Van Gorder, right? So his hiring is not bulletproof. His quarterback development and evaluation is not bulletproof. And if it doesn't go well at LSU, it's a nightmare that I don't know how quickly he can recover from.
Well, and that's my question. Can you develop a quarterback? Because the best three quarterbacks in the last 12 years at Notre Dame have been Ian Book, DeShone Kizer, and depending on which way the wind blows, either Tommy Rees or Everett Golson.
Sure.
Book was a good quarterback in college. There was a ceiling to what he could give him. He was good, winning his quarterback in program history, but go back and listen to some of my old commentary to get how I felt about Ian Book.
Sure.
And how that quarterback position developed over the years. It's like 7 of the 12 seasons in South Bend for BK that he had a hard time committing to a quarterback. And LSU knows that song and dance well. Like, outside of 2018 and obviously 2019, it's pretty much been a deep, dark hole outside the Joe Burrow years. That's not what they're looking for. They're looking for somebody who can come in there and harness the true power of that recruiting operation and the talent that they bring on to play as part of that offense. So can he do it at LSU? I don't know if a change of scenery helps him do that, but he will have the chance. And I think that's going to be truly the burning question for me, not just this coming year, but really throughout his entire stay in Baton Rouge.
Yeah, I mean, you're totally right. And he's, again, I go back to the division thing. For whatever reason, we are now in a golden era of SEC West quarterbacks. With what Alabama does year after year, we know Mike Leach and Lane Kiffin are going to find and develop dudes who are productive. Same goes for Jimbo Fisher. Same goes, it seems, for Kendall Briles in Arkansas, with how quickly they got Felipe Franks up to speed. And now KJ Jefferson is, to me, a big national name. So you don't want to be the one left standing without solid to very good quarterback play when the music stops.
All right, where do you want to go next?
You tell me, man. You made the Google Doc.
Let's go to Lincoln Riley.
Okay.
And USC. Clay Helton out, Lincoln Riley in. Here is why I think this works. Okay. I think this works because there are now serious people running the USC football program, the athletic department. As George Costanza would say, these are men with jobs. They've finally gotten away from that whole USC guy thing because they've got Mike Bonin from Cincinnati. He's not a USC guy. Lincoln Riley, clearly not a USC guy either. It starts at the top. And now there are capable people running this thing. So I feel good about that. I think the situation is better, will be better now. Lincoln Riley has clearly proven that he can develop talent. He can put it into the NFL. He can recruit nationally. He can recruit California. He's been a perennial top dog in a conference that, I'm sorry to say, is much better than the Pac-12.
Much?
And he's been doing so for the last couple seasons.
No, I mean, the case for Lincoln Riley is very easy. I mean, his offenses are electric. He produces Heisman-winning quarterbacks and high draft picks at receiver, quarterback, running back, whatever. The offensive line has been great. And, yeah, his path to the playoff within the Pac-12, if USC is merely good, even if they're not great, is a lot cleaner than it would be in many other conferences. His name came up with the LSU opening. It's a lot cleaner, that path, to get to the playoff and restore USC to where its fans think the Trojans should be in the national conversation with what the Pac-12 looks like right now. The recruiting is interesting because Southern California is not what it was during the Pete Carroll time. And I think the big thing is the path, and path and offense, I think, is the clear case.
More importantly, the program didn't go off a cliff after he took it over for Bob Stoops.
Correct.
And we've seen many a coach step in for a legend and go full Thelma and Louise. And just,
true. Within a couple years. And no, it survived.
Why won't it work, Dan? Give me a reason.
It won't work because everybody looks at USC and says, man, look what he did at Oklahoma with that offense. Imagine what he could do at USC with that path. He's bringing the Oklahoma defensive coaches with him. And that's something that's interesting, I suppose. And maybe there were reasons it didn't work out at Oklahoma, but he recruited good defensive prospects, a lot of blue chip players on all three levels that Oklahoma was able to bring in. It won't work because of the defense. It won't work because Lincoln Riley has never taken over a down program. He was handed the keys to a Maserati with experience having already driven it some of the time. And at USC, it's a rebuild. It's a reconstruction. It's a different place. And we think USC has invested resources and is now a more serious place with more serious leadership. But we actually have to see it, right? We don't have actual evidence of it yet. And so is it Lincoln? And we're also on the heels of Lincoln Riley's arguable worst season as an Oklahoma head coach, not making the Big 12 championship game. And so is there any sort of momentum to people figuring out Lincoln Riley or people figuring out, okay, if he doesn't have a top one pick in the NFL draft, maybe his teams are merely good and not great. And so maybe there's that Lincoln Riley regressing to becoming a merely very good coach, not a coach with an elite reputation.
Yeah, I think we're kind of saying the same thing here. I'm going to ask the question about the defense in my burning question bit here, but
okay,
on the specific topic of why won't it work, I do think the risk of failure is pretty low, but sure. Even though he's not a USC guy and we feel good about that, they did still sort of use the same hiring template, didn't they? Like Riley is the latest on this long list of up and coming offensive geniuses that USC has tried and spit out. Over the
young guns, the hot, sexy Clay Helton type.
So, you know, they've tried this before, and albeit now with new leadership, perhaps that's more of a fertile crescent for a program to rise up and take the playoff in the Pac-12 by storm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to see 1 year before I fully commit to the bit and saying that, yeah, this is going to work.
So what's your burning question is defense, you said?
My burning question is, can he toughen up the defense? Like you said, he brought over Alex Grinch with him from Oklahoma. They're going to have their work cut out for him because this past year for USC, the defense was Drake Jackson. And then around him, 10 guys who got pushed around. And developing defense has not been his forte. He's trying to get better. That's why he brought Alex Grinch over from Ohio State a couple years ago. And there have been marginal improvements there, but I think this is a different kind of rebuild. He's going to need to toughen him up. And I don't know if we've seen a whole lot of proof that he can do that. So we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah. At a certain point, you have to keep going further and further back in time for Alex Grinch's success. And that's not always the best, right? That's not always the, like, this is a dude year in and year out. He just, even producing solid defenses might be an improvement over where Oklahoma was. So yeah, I think that's definitely an open question on a coast in a recruiting footprint that doesn't produce 4 or 5 star defensive tackles, edge rushers, safe. Like it's just that it's, you're farther and farther away geographically, which is why, you know, I and Ryan Abraham, when we did our show, we talked about the national recruiting footprint that USC sees itself with, because that's what it'll need to be. It's difficult.
We both feel pretty bullish on this move, though.
I do, yeah.
Okay. Let's go on over to the replacement at Oklahoma. Lincoln Riley out, Brent Venables in. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is a much more interesting conversation because now we're starting to pop the hood on guys who have not any previous college football head coaching experience.
Right.
That was sort of a theme with some of these hires. These guys come in with much acclaim. Brent Venables is no different. Brent Venables knows the place, loves the place, is from the general area, coached under great coaches, and has been very patient for the right situation. He didn't just jump at the first opportunity. Lord knows he had a ton of opportunities out there. But one of the reasons why I think this will work is because he was patient and waited for a situation that he thought was good for him. He also knows how to recruit. He certainly knows how to build an elite defense, which probably means a very high floor. Like, defenses True. Respond to this guy. And I think he will get them playing a tougher, better brand of defense in Norman pretty quickly. He also did a good job of quelling fears about his offensive expertise by hiring away Jeff Lebby from Ole Miss to run the offense. Now, some folks are mixed on Jeff Lebby. There's baggage from the Baylor thing and whatever. But in a pure football sense, Jeff Lebby did a good job, a really good job, with Matt Corral and Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. And so that's a pretty good hire as football things go. Those are the reasons why I think it will work. He's a good guy. He knows the place well. He knows how to recruit. He obviously brought in some firepower on offense. I'll talk about Ted Roof on defense. We'll get to that in a second. But
yeah,
I think
Ted Roof is probably the patsy if things don't start out well on defense, and it's Brent Venables' defense. And I was like, oh, we got to move on from Ted Roof, right? That you hired like that patsy guy that is friendly in interviews well. But no, I think you made the case pretty well. I mean, it's also Brent Venables has experience fielding very strong defenses when his own team's offense is explosive and electric, at least until this past season, which is where Oklahoma struggled. They didn't have the depth. They didn't have the strategy. They weren't able to force the turnovers that a defense that sees itself on the field a lot because of a quick scoring offense is not always able to do. So I think the force of personality, the experience, the stage with which Brent Venables is used to winning, it's all a big plus in his column.
Why won't it work?
It won't work because he's a first-time head coach, and it's difficult as a first-time head coach to take over a major, major blue chip program with expectations on the level of Oklahoma's, which should realistically be the playoff. USC's should maybe eventually be the playoff, but what Oklahoma has and what Oklahoma invests in this program, what they're able to attract in terms of national recruits, you know, bringing the number one quarterback from the DC area with Caleb Williams, you know, going to California, you know, obviously going into Texas, there's a ton of pressure to win at Oklahoma. And if he's merely good and he is merely running a 9-3 program, he's a failure. And so that's why it won't work. He hasn't been in that seat before. And to be in that seat for the first time with those types of expectations, it's a lot. That day-to-day of running a huge program, all the small, medium, and large elements, it's difficult.
Yeah, he's also moving into the SEC shortly.
Good call.
Which does mean tougher competition on a week-to-week basis. Maybe it's good to get that defense in prime working order beforehand. That would serve them well. I just wrote down Ted Roof. Ted Roof's, I'm sure, a nice guy. I don't like Ted Roof running my defense. I don't want him anywhere near my defense.
I don't think he's running the defense.
I don't want the leaky roof anywhere near my defense.
I honestly don't think his fingerprints will be all over this Oklahoma defense in the way, like, he will be tasked with helping to run it. I don't know who's calling the defensive plays during a game, but I don't think, and I could be wrong, Brent Venable said, yep, that's my dude. And maybe Ted Roof is just an Iron Chef type. He only wins with top level talent, but also that kind of hasn't been the case either. So I don't know.
No, I don't want the leaky roof anywhere near my defense.
Okay,
so
fair enough.
That spooked me a little bit. That's
kind of
on
like the
level.
The cooler that the casinos bring in when somebody's too hot at the craps table.
That spooks me to the same degree as Jimmy Lake hiring John Donovan. I hate to say it.
Okay, that's reasonable.
Burning question for me is, can he continue the momentum on the offensive side of the ball? Even though we hired Lebby.
Yeah,
and even though he held on to Caleb Williams, there's an open question for me, like 2 or 3 years from now. What shape is that offense going to take? Because I think whether or not Lebby is successful, he's probably destined for a head job somewhere relatively soon. And so that means you're hiring other people. That means you got to continue with that recruiting operation. Certainly at the quarterback position, that recruiting operation ran through Lincoln Riley. This is a dude who pumped out Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks, first overall draft picks. If you're Caleb Williams or someone like Caleb Williams, Spencer Rattler, why wouldn't you want to go there? Now it doesn't have that same level of cachet. So what's it look like a couple of years down the road on the offensive side, especially? Defensively, we know the drill there. Defensively, he puts guys in the league. We saw what he did at Clemson. Everywhere he's been, he's done a good job with defense. But offensively, even with a really good coordinator, that to me is the burning question. I just don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, I think that's totally reasonable. And some of the continuity for Oklahoma, especially Bill Beedenbaugh up front, certainly is an amazing starting point, his reputation as an offensive line coach. But you're right. It's when you have these defensive standout minds taking over a full program, what do they want their offense to be? What, like, and we've seen it time after time where defensive coaches want the offense to serve the defense. They want ball control. They want the defense rested. They want to dominate the game via defense. They don't want to play with pace because, you know, they don't want to risk getting off the field super quickly. And so is Brent Venables open to airing it out, letting it fly, playing quickly, you know, playing creative RPO stuff, which obviously comes with, you know, the Jeff Lebby fingerprints on the offense. I don't know what Jeff Lebby's play calling experience was under both Josh Heupel and Lane Kiffin. I know Lane Kiffin called the plays last year for Ole Miss. So to what degree was Lebby involved with the architecture of that offense? My guess is significantly, but yeah, I think you're right. What is the vision for this offense with Brent Venables' perspective coming from the defensive side? Defensive. So I'm right there with you.
Dan, let's go out west to Washington, your favorite school.
I like Washington. It's right on a lake. Seattle's a great city. It's wonderful.
Jimmy Lake out, Kalen DeBoer in. I love this hire.
Okay, talk to me.
I love it. This is low-key my favorite hire of the cycle.
What?
It is.
Wow. Okay.
I love this move. I love it. He's 47 and 79-9 as a head coach, if you count the 2 years at Fresno and the 5 years before that at Sioux Falls, which is lower level of college football, granted, but won 3 championships there. He has had an almost instant impact everywhere he's gone, especially on offense. Mainly an offense. That's been his deal.
Right. Yep.
Sort of an understated guy, like a really good cultural fit for that part of the country in the Pacific Northwest. He brings over Ryan Grubb, who was his OC at Fresno, and that was a good Fresno team. They made a former Husky quarterback in Jay Kane look really good. Just a lot to like. He made Michael Penix Jr. Michael Penix liked him so much, he's transferring up to Washington now.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a guy who, by all accounts, an X's and O's genius, seems like he fits in very well culturally. I do have some questions about the recruiting, which we can talk about, but talk me off that position, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, the case, I think you nailed the case for it. It's really as simple as he wins everywhere he's been on smaller, medium, and larger levels in the Mountain West. Now, he hasn't run a program of this size, and the expectations in Washington are winning 8-plus games, competing at their best, competing for a conference crown, and given, you know, expectations in the history of Washington at its best. And this was a playoff team, what, 5 years ago? So yeah. It's not unrealistic to say they should be at their best, and when they're at their most experienced and when they've nailed evaluation and development, they should be winning 10-plus games at their best. Not every year, but when they're hitting their ceiling. The question to me is, Oregon's not going anywhere, to me. USC is improving. Wazoo, we'll see. Stanford is down. The Arizona schools are, I mean, I think Arizona's heading in the right direction, but it's going to be a while. UCLA, I think, is decent. But is Kalen DeBoer able to acquire and develop talent recruiting against the West Coast powers? And obviously, Utah is year in and year out very good. Is he going to be able to build a roster to compete to win 9-plus games? Because I think they can win 8 or 9, but I don't know about his ceiling if he's not able to bring in top-flight talent. And so what I've seen from the staff hires early is familiarity. I'm curious to see. I think it's more of an open question. How much does Washington invest in recruiting? Like, Chris Peterson really built a recruiting operation in Seattle, and they were fielding top-flight recruiting classes and taking advantage of Sark's classes as well. Just the question to me is, what does the talent level look like? Are they going to rely solely on development? And if so, that's great. But that's sort of that's when you get into that 9-win ceiling. So on the margins, how talented will Washington be in 3 years is my open question.
Yeah, I think we're both sort of saying the same thing.
Yeah.
When we talk about the reason it won't work as well as the burning question.
Totally.
Can he build a recruiting operation that can match up with the likes of Oregon? Schematically, everyone loves him. Everyone thinks he's a genius schematically.
Sure.
But the recruiting side of this is very interesting to me. And on some level, yeah, you got to take that recruiting operation up a peg. And you got to find a way to bring in that top flight talent and develop that. That gives you the higher ceiling. I don't know. I don't know if we've seen that he can do that yet. And so that's
Washington,
for me, is
by the way,
question.
The state of is an underrated place in terms of recruits. And we've seen the path from Washington to Ohio State look pretty fertile. You know, JT Tuamalu, a couple of receivers these past couple of years heading to Ohio State. It's, can he even just keep those kids home? Can he convince and build the Washington brand to a point where top flight Northwest recruits are saying, yeah, Washington's the move? Not even just Oregon, not even USC, but staying away from Notre Dame, Michigan, you know, Ohio State, obviously, that, you know, teams nationally are going to the Pacific Northwest. And so it's rebuilding Washington from the failed Jimmy Lake experiment.
All right, Dan, if only for dramatic interlude. It's our DraftKings Game of the Week presented by the DraftKings Sportsbook. We talked about this on the Monday show. We're getting closer to the playoff. This show dropping on Wednesday, the playoff on Friday. Again, it's Michigan, it's Georgia. Right now, Georgia favored by 7.5. You're over under listed at 45 points. It's like a freaking NFL game. Mm-hmm. This is the game that I am looking forward to. It is on Friday evening. I need to find a way to watch this game amid the other New Year's Eve festivities. Thanks, Bill Hancock. But I'm excited. I'm excited for this game. I am still on Georgia minus the 7.5. You, I believe, are on Michigan plus the 7.5. Who are you picking outright one more time?
Michigan. The Wolverines. I'm staying with it.
Are you saying that because you believe it or because you want to stay married?
I believe it. No, I do believe it because I was on a podcast and one of the hosts brought up a good point that Georgia is secretly like the super rich man's, the billionaire's Big Ten team, with winning with defense and ball control efficiency and a quarterback who is good and makes plays, but is not always, this is not an electric, explosive offense from Georgia all of the time, especially without having the consistent speed and playmaking outside. And so I just think Michigan may just be built via their pass rush, via the creativity of this offense, and even without Ronnie Bell. I'm curious about, like, what would your case be for the under? Just that the quarter, you know, Cade McNamara and Stetson Bennett are underwhelming. What's the case for the under of 45 so that we get like a 23-20 game or something like that?
The case for the under is that, frankly, both defenses overpower the opposing offenses.
True. Yeah.
Michigan's defense is able to confuse and curtail and keep down the Georgia offense, which, by the way, is entirely plausible. Mm-hmm. Entirely plausible. Georgia's offense against good defenses is not something we've seen a whole lot of this season. So I think that for sure. And then on the flip side, Georgia's defense, we know all about the Georgia defense. We've been singing its praises all year. Can they stop what Michigan wants to do, which is run the ball 40 times? Yeah, absolutely. And so if this turns into a rock fight between Stetson Bennett and Cade McNamara, yeah, I feel pretty good about that under. I would track towards the under if I were actually betting. I'm not good at over-unders, so maybe don't take my word for it.
Right.
But 45 points in a game where both teams are probably terrified of making the big mistake, yeah, totally can see the under.
Yeah, and it's one of those things also where, I mean, what was the largest number of points a team scored against Georgia? Was it Tennessee? Was it Kentucky? There wasn't a lot of points scored against this defense.
Before Alabama, it was 17 points.
That's not many points if you're looking to cover and over.
All right. Well, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the promo code SOLID, S-O-L-I-D. Bet just $5 on Michigan or Georgia or any college football team, And you win $200 in free bets if they are victorious.
Damn.
That's promo code SOLID to bet on college football this bowl season at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older in New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Back to the coaching circuit, Dan.
Yes.
Talk to me about Florida.
Florida's fascinating. Florida's fascinating. The case for Billy Napier is he has major program experience. That's English, right? He has the experience. He has experience winning. He has experience as a head coach. He comes in with obviously high expectations at Florida, given where Georgia is as a program, given where we believe the SEC East is going. You know, Kentucky has ascended to a good place. Tennessee, we think, is on the way up. South Carolina appears to be on the way up. And it's a, you know, we'll see with Mizzou, I suppose, but they're recruiting very well. And expectations at Florida are compete to win the East, compete to win the conference. And if you win the conference, it's compete in the playoff. And Billy Napier is a proven head coach who has won big games relative to the place he was at in Louisiana and won that conference and comes in as, I suppose, by all indications, a grown-up running a program that very much needs a grown-up running it. And, you know, there's definitely we'll see elements and there's definitely, I suppose, cases against it. But in terms of his resume, in terms of his reputation, I don't know what more you would like to see from somebody coming from the G5 level.
He's 42. He's familiar with the area. He's already 41-12 as a head coach at Louisiana, which is a good base. He's coached under both Dabo and Nick Saban, which is sort of like going to both Harvard and Yale.
Mm-hmm.
It was the least spectacular big hire. And I think you always feel good about that.
Yeah.
Florida, this monster job. Somehow flew completely under the radar as USC and LSU and Oregon and Miami and Notre Dame were all doing their thing and just it worked into a frenzy. This was a very unspectacular hire. And what I like about it is there's no shtick, is there? There's no shtick.
No.
He's an adult. His teams were rock solid. And they were always good. And they were at a clear talent disadvantage when they played some teams from the Power Five, but they were always competitive. And they played
beat
hard.
Iowa State. Beat
Big
Iowa 12
State.
Runner-up Iowa State, yeah.
And so this is just a guy who knows how to coach really good football. And he does it the right way. And he's going to have his work cut out for him now because he's not playing Louisiana competition. He's playing the SEC East. That's really my only case against. I like the Billy Napier hire. We brought Bruce Feldman on the program, you know, a couple weeks ago, months ago now. And it seemed as if the Napier hire was sort of a no-brainer to Florida. Everyone wanted the move. He wanted it. It happened very quickly. The case against, I think, is that it's the SEC East. And the SEC East has gotten demonstrably tougher in the last year and a half. Even if you win all the games you're quote-unquote supposed to, that's like a 10-2 season. Dan Mullen did that twice. Dan Mullen went to three New Year's Six bowl games. They canned him the first time he didn't go to one. Now, I get that there are extenuating circumstances and recruiting. We could talk about the Mullenisms if we want to. But the bar is much, much higher at Florida than it is at a place like Louisiana. That side of the conference is getting more difficult. New teams are coming into the conference, which is going to make it even more difficult than it's been over the last decade plus. And so we just have not seen Napier coach on this level. That's not necessarily a reason why it won't. It's a reason why it might not. But I feel really good about the hire. I question about him running a job this big, an operation this huge.
Also, if you look at programs with the expectations of a University of Florida Gators, which programs across the nation have succeeded on that level hiring from a group of five school, a head coach from the group of five? Now, Chris Peterson at Washington took them to the playoff. Ultimately, long-term didn't work out. But who else, right? It's a lot of internal hires. It's a lot of coordinators from huge places. In the case of Michigan this year, it was Jim Harbaugh at Stanford, Jim Harbaugh with the 49ers, Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. And so that leap is not always the most successful one at a major place. Maybe I'm not thinking of one, but in terms of track record of winning major conference, getting to the playoff, who is there? Is there another name across the country where you're like, this guy worked at a G5 place and is now killing it at a huge job at a, you know, a Power 5 school? Maybe I'm missing it. But, you know, if it's, I guess, Lane Kiffin at FAU, if that's the goal. But Lane Kiffin obviously had a lot of major head coaching experience at, you know, Tennessee briefly and USC. So where is the track record necessarily? Yeah, that's what I'm curious about. Doesn't mean he can't do it. It just means it hasn't been done a ton.
I think the burning question for me is, you know, as we alluded here, Florida made the move away from Dan Mullen for a number of reasons, notably because of concerns in the recruiting operation.
Right.
Also, he basically lost the team, which that happens. You're pretty much dead. Doesn't matter what you did. But can Napier build that type of operation on the recruiting trail that's going to rival Georgia? That's going to rival even South Carolina. Like, South Carolina is bringing in Spencer Rattler. I mean, they're all upping their game in the SEC. Tennessee's doing a good job. Kentucky is doing a good job. Like, this is a side of the conference that has gotten a lot, lot better very quickly. Can he build an operation that's going to rival the competition on that side of the conference? And in the short term, instill more discipline on the roster? Because these guys did give up. They gave up for Dan. Yeah. They don't want to be there. So I'm curious. I'm very curious to see what he can do on that front, on the recruiting trail.
Yeah, well, how good is he at rebooting the Florida brand after it suffered, both in terms of the on-field product and on the recruiting trail? Also, just an open question, and not necessarily why he won't succeed, but now in his state at Miami is one of the best five recruiters in the nation that they're competing against for in-state kids, which is not always the case. When you look at some previous Miami head coaches, not that Miami hasn't recruited well, but now that's going to be what we presume to be an in-state machine, unlike, you know, maybe the height of Florida State for sure under Jimbo was, but that's definitely a new challenge, I would say, for Florida.
Why don't we go there next?
Sure.
That's a pro segue.
Let's
talk about Mario Cristobal, Mario Cristobal for the cultured among us, going back home to Miami. Mario Cristobal played their offensive line back in the heyday for Miami football. He's a Miami guy.
Yeah.
He knows what the U is all about. He is an ace recruiter. He is a very good coach. There is a lot to like about the crystal ball situation. Those are the reasons why it will work. I have more reasons why I don't think it will. I have other burning questions, but outside of the recruiting, outside of his familiarity with that part of the country, with this part of college football, give me some other reasons why it'll work.
Remind me who played in the ACC championship game this year. That's a reason it'll work. If you have to merely be better than Pitt and Wake Forest to win the conference as it stands now, I understand Clemson is in this conference. I understand Florida State and a potentially improved, revised Florida State is in this conference. I understand North Carolina and the way they've recruited and the way that the best of North Carolina is in this conference, and NC State. There are cases to be made for several programs, but the two that broke through were Pitt and Wake Forest. So merely being talented and winning games and more talented than everybody, maybe save for Clemson of in, you know, 2-3 years or whatever, should be enough for Miami to win a ton of games. And they have a quarterback. You know, Mario Cristobal inheriting a quarterback has been a thing already, and he's won conferences with that inherited quarterback. We like Tyler Van Dyme a considerable amount. That's a great starting point. When you have quarterback and recruiting, you can go a long ways. And Mario Cristobal has apparently had the resources added to the program that he felt were necessary for Miami to compete with the best of the best nationally. We'll see if it works out. We'll see if it's an actual long-term dedication. But everything is in place for Miami to win a ton of games with a ton of really good players.
The situation's a mess. It's a mess. And I know that you got this infusion of cash now into the athletic program. And That's why they went out and they poached Mario, as well as Dan Radakovich brought him over from Clemson to be the athletic director. There's talk about building stadiums on campus and upgrading facilities. Just as you said, putting all the things in place that they feel they need to revive the program. That's all great. But that stuff does not happen overnight, Dan.
You know, I think Mario knows that, but yeah.
He knows it. Do Miami people know it? Because If we're going to dunk on USC for going after all the USC guys, the same should hold true here. Miami has been a program that has arguably been much worse at following that same playbook over the last decade. And So we can talk a great game about all these things that they're going to do to fix the program. But really what I question is, what is the definition of success here? How are we going to score How Mario Cristobal does? As I understand it, over the last decade, there have really been two measures for head football coach at Miami. Number one, are you Miami enough for the job? You know, like this purity test,
right?
This purity test that's sort of a prereq for the job. And It was, Manny Diaz is from here, but he's not Mario who played here. Oh, okay. And then once you're in, too, are you winning national championships?
Right.
There has to be some middle ground. Like, maybe we start with getting to the ACC title game. Maybe we start there. Or maybe we get to 10 wins to a better bowl game or something of the sort. But there has to be some middle ground that we can grade Cristobal on something of a curve, somewhere between being here and playing here and being beloved here and winning national championships. We need some dose of realism here in this program. So all the good stuff is gravy. Let's build the stadium on campus. Let's get the athletic department in order. Let's spend more money on the football program. Let's get there. But in the interim, the program is still sort of a mess. And we need to rebalance expectations a bit, because he's not going to win a national championship that quickly. Not saying he won't do it. He's a good coach. But it's going to take a while to get there, to get to the ACC title game, to do these interim things that need to happen first. And so for me, why won't it happen? A, the situation's a mess. And B, what is the definition for success? That's my burning question. I want to know, how are we grading Mario Cristobal, and what are Miami fans saying after year one if he goes 8-4?
Do you have a favorite Miami ACC championship?
There have been so many, haven't there?
It's so hard to pick. Miami's not an ACC championship program. I mean, that's the reality in which we live. Maybe that changes, but we have a lot of data to suggest that Miami as an institution, which is what Bill C is quick to point out, is sometimes you don't blame coaches, you blame places. There are reasons places can't win. And Miami doesn't fully reflect USC, but there are some faint whiffs of USC. Hiring a Miami guy, big city, big expectations to get back to past glory without actually doing what it takes to win, you know, the step before that or the three steps before that. And so there's a lot of talk, Ty. There's not a lot of walk so far, right? So
yeah.
And I'm just talking about the last 20 years, not necessarily Mario Cristobal's tenure. That's the issue to me, that there's going to be a crazy amount of pressure on Mario Cristobal because of his status as an alumnus and, you know, player for the Canes. And also, Miami is just not a conference championship program. It's just not. Again, it can change, but sometimes we are who we are at a certain point and can change, but there are reasons why Miami hasn't been there. And so it was like a booster, right? There was a billionaire booster who was like, I'm going to tear down a middle school and build a stadium. And it just didn't happen, right? It just is not happening. I haven't seen blueprints. I haven't seen bulldozers. So it's a program built around talk and not necessarily built around walk. Maybe it changes, but again, sometimes we just are who we are.
The swagger, baby. Got to bring the swagger back. Since 1989. Okay.
By the way, the open question to me is offense and offensive coordinator and what the vision is going to look like that's different than what really did hold Oregon back.
Yeah, right.
That's the question for me with Miami. Not necessarily can he get them back to glory or whatever, but the next 2 years question is, how is it different than what held Oregon back? And I'm yet to see.
All right, let's go on up to the Pacific Northwest. Let's pull on this thread a little bit more. Cristobal bolts. He goes back home to Miami. Dan Lanning is your new head football coach at Oregon. Dan Lanning going to be calling the plays for Georgia as defensive coordinator in the playoff game against Michigan. So we'll get one final look at him, I guess. I guess if they go to the national championship, he'd call him again, but we'll see.
I mean, he could always be Lane Kiffin, right? Where you're just like, I don't think your head's here. Bye-bye. Between those two games.
Who knows? We'll have to wait and see what happens if they end up winning. But for the time being anyway, we'll see more of him and his work at Georgia. He is young. He is charismatic. He is an awesome recruiter. He has no familiarity with the Pacific Northwest. He's a first-time head football coach. He's going to be put in charge of this big operation. Where are we at on Dan Lanning? Why will it work? Why won't it work? And what's your biggest question?
It will work because of his reputation connecting with kids and recruits and people within the program and his reputation, his energy, given his age. You know, everybody is, you know, wants the next Sean McVay, right? Everybody wants the next. Is the Packers coach good? I don't know the names of these young coaches in the NFL, but everybody is like seduced by that, or Lincoln Riley or whatever, that young hotshot coach. And he's on the defensive side. He's not like an offensive wunderkind as... That's a German thing, right? Wunderkind?
Yeah.
And he's recruiting his tail off at Georgia and building a recruiting monster at Oregon with his staff hires, with hiring Texas A&M and previously Georgia's, you know, I forget the exact title, but it's the chief personnel type guy, the director of whatever, Marshall Malchow, I don't know how to pronounce it. So there is an entire focus on, you know, recruiting and bringing in consistent top eight national classes, which is what Mario Cristobal was basically able to do. And so talent plus conference plus energy plus hopefully a rethought of offense that really struggled and a new person to try to evaluate and develop quarterbacks and the quarterbacks existing and the roster that exists, which is arguably the deepest and best roster depending on who actually comes back. There's a lot to like about where Dan Lanning's Oregon potential is.
I don't know how I feel about this with a first-time head coach.
Sure.
Going to a part of the country that he's not terribly familiar with. My questions are around staff and staves.
Staves.
What kind of support net will be put around Dan Lanning? Everybody loves Dan Lanning. Like, you won't talk to anybody who doesn't think this is a good hire, especially as late in the game as it came together.
Sure.
This is about as good as Oregon was going to do. So, you know, if you believe the people who are closest to him, who have worked with him, everybody's very bullish on this move. But there are a lot of questions. It is not a Marcus Freeman situation which we can talk about next.
No, not internal.
He's been on the staff. He's not a promotion from within. Like, this is uprooting and going 3,000 miles the opposite direction.
Totally.
And so I question it from that standpoint. Doesn't mean it can't work. But in terms of this little goofy game we're playing, I would say there's no familiarity with the region. He's a first-time head coach. It's a lot of upheaval. And then being put in charge of this huge operation, Oregon obviously is sort of the crown jewel at the moment of the Pac-12 North, maybe the Pac-12 as a whole. That's a lot of pressure for a first-timer. Mm-hmm.
Totally. I think you're right. I think, look, the lack of experience and going to a big place, just like we've talked about with other coaches in this coaching search, that, I mean, I guess it was Brent Venables, who's certainly older and more experienced and has been around more big programs with bigger roles at big programs. So it's not a direct apples to apples analogy, but you're totally right. It's him putting a staff together for the first time, him putting together a recruiting department and personnel department, and dealing with the ins and outs of daily college football bossing that I think is a huge question. And, you know, he trained under one of the best with Kirby Smart. And before that, Mike Norvell at Memphis. It's a wide gaping question of what does Dan Lanning look like as a younger guy tasked with taking over a major program that has won on big levels. And I guess the open question is, again, it's right now it's quarterback. Why he won't is what I just laid out. What the open question is, quarterback and offense and Kenny Dillingham, and, you know, what does this look like? What is the vision for an offense? Like we mentioned with Brent Venables, as a defensive-minded guy.
All right, let's close it out here. Well, there are a bunch of coaches that we can talk about.
We can do a bunch of quick hitters. We can do a bunch of quick hitters.
But we do have to close it out with a little bit more detail about the Notre Dame thing and Marcus Freeman.
Just quick hitter to me.
Marcus Freeman. Freeman promoted from within. He is young. He is charismatic. He's a hell of a recruiter. And I believe that for Notre Dame to get to that next gear, they need an even stronger focus on recruiting if they want to continue raising the floor. It's just where they have to go next. I give them credit for recognizing that this is the guy who seemingly can help them do that. It's a huge shift for Notre Dame in a very brief period of time. They have gone from the older guy and Brian Kelly at the top of this thing, kind of the legacy coach who's been there for a decade plus, to this young upstart, frankly. It's been a huge brand revival in a matter of days and weeks, turning things over from Brian Kelly, who was still successful and was still getting recruits, to a 35-year-old Marcus Freeman and a 29-year-old Tommy Rees. We'll see if it works. I don't know. I'm hopeful. But that's a lot of brand revival in a very short period of time. Marcus Freeman is going to give them that. He's going to give them, I think, a degree of continuity as well. Because not only is he staying on staff, but a bunch of the heavy hitters outside of Rees are also going to be there. So even though Freeman is new at the top,
right,
functionally speaking, it may not be all that different. Which is a good spot if you're Marcus Freeman. As for why it won't work, tell me why you think.
He's young. He's inexperienced. He's taking over a major program with huge expectations at a unique place. And what does quarterback look like moving forward? What is... what is different? I mean, that's an open question, I guess. What is the quarterback? What is the offensive vision for this Notre Dame team without Brian Kelly? But this is a place that largely hires not older, but more experienced head coaches who can deal with the intricacies and unique challenges of Notre Dame from a more grizzled perspective, perhaps, especially the guys who have succeeded. And Marcus Freeman isn't that. Marcus Freeman just isn't that. He's also relatively new. He is 11 months, 12 months in South Bend. And so while he is internal, he's not longtime Notre Dame defensive coordinator. And so that's just going to be new. It's just going to be new for him with the unique challenges of Notre Dame, with, you know, the academic requirements. And I think he'll recruit well. I really do. I believe it might even, you know, go up a notch consistently, but it's that day to day. It's the dealing with players who want to transfer. It's dealing with parents. It's dealing with administrators that he's never done. And same can be said for Dan Lanning for sure. But it's the unique difficulties of taking over a major program without having spent a lot of time there. You know, Mario Cristobal did that at Oregon. He was only there for a year with Willie Taggart. So I think it can be done. I'm more optimistic than I am concerned. But, you know, young guy, green, I think that's the case.
First-time head coaches have not done well at Notre Dame.
No.
There's not a whole lot of success to point to. Each situation's different. But they haven't. They haven't been successful. And it is a unique place. It's a tough first job to get, for sure. I think he's equipped well to handle it. He certainly seems capable. People love him. The players love him. But if we're being objective about this, you have to point out that this is a different kind of job that has not always had a whole lot of success for first timers. So why won't it work? We've got a track record on that side.
What's the status of his staff hiring?
Unclear at this point. The open question at the moment is on defense and what that looks like moving forward.
Sure.
That's what I'm looking most forward to finding out more about. I've got a couple burning questions about this.
Oh, okay. Hit me.
Most notably, at his presser, he talked about how he wants to enhance. Use the word enhance a lot. Enhance, enhance, enhance. Pete Sampson, our friend who was on the podcast, he asked him, what do you mean by that, Marcus? He didn't really answer. You know, it was probably one of those things like you and I, when we just sort of talk ourselves into a corner and then you're stuck with it on the record.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I hope he enhances. That'd be great. But I think it was probably something he said to be non-controversial, and he doesn't have any specifics around that. For the short term, for me, it's can you go to Ohio State in week one and be competitive next year?
Right.
And longer term, can you develop a quarterback? As a defensive guy, can you develop a quarterback? I don't know. So definitely a ton of burning questions about Marcus Freeman, but
reasonable.
We could talk about those in due time. Let's do some quick hitters, though.
All right.
Give me some quick hitters that you're interested in. What jobs out there did we not talk about that we owe a little bit more attention to?
There are a lot of them, but Jeff Tedford at Fresno State, you know, can he hire and win like he was able to do before when Kalen DeBoer was on staff? Jay Norvell at Colorado State, there were some open questions about their consistency and especially on defense, and he's bringing over a lot of guys he knows. Ken Wilson at Nevada, you know, coming over from Oregon as a linebackers coach, very familiar with that program, and so can he rebuild that defense? Can he evaluate and find kids? Because he's a really well thought of coach and was at Oregon, both from the recruiting perspective and from a coaching perspective, and so what does that look like at a place that you can win and is not terribly far from talent? I'm trying to think what else, you know, Joe Moorhead's going to Akron, I think is fascinating. Can he get them back to a bowl-ish program? It's much closer to where he's from in Pittsburgh.
Area. And there are other Power 5 jobs too, right? TCU and Sonny Dykes. Sonny Dykes is from the area. He knows it well, but can he play defense?
It's defense and quarterback. It's the name of the game. And what does the recruiting operation look like in a pretty fertile part of the country? His staff is, I don't believe, complete, but has a couple of interesting guys. So yeah, it's defense and quarterback. It's always defense and quarterback. Going to follow around Sonny Dykes. Yeah.
And by the way, Texas Tech isn't in all that dissimilar a situation, but they've got this huge infusion of enthusiasm now with Joey McGuire, successful high school football coach, who is taken over, was at Baylor for a little bit. There's been a lot of steam so far on that program. People are very excited about him taking over.
With Kidley, by the way, from Western Kentucky as his offensive coordinator. I think that's
exactly
a huge reason for optimism. Yeah.
I think they'll put points on the board. I think it's a very fascinating program to follow, but another first-timer taking over a big job in Texas. Virginia Tech, to me, is very interesting. I like Brent Pry a lot. He's familiar with the region. He's a good recruiter. I think he will build a good defense. What I do have questions about, though, is he's a first-timer, and he's hiring two 32-year-old coordinators.
Yep.
And Tyler Bowen, who comes up, he worked with Tyler Bowen for a couple of years at Penn State. Tyler Bowen's been the tight ends coach at Jacksonville. And Chris Marv, who was, I think, a linebackers coach at Florida State. So first-time head coach, two first-time coordinators. Not to say it won't work, but talk about playing without a net, right? That's about as high stakes as you're going to get.
Oh, yeah, and not really bringing back a ton on either side of the ball that you're like, oh, this is the core of a 10-win program, especially on offense. So that, to me, is a question with him. Tony Elliott at Virginia, that put up monster numbers. It's who can they convince to come back. I saw they just lost an offensive lineman officially to Michigan. I think they're center. So it's who can Virginia bring back from this offense, and what does he do in terms of fully – you know, going after a defensive coordinator and a defensive staff who can both recruit and coach their asses off, because this Virginia defense was a nightmare in terms of production. So a lot of ACC questions. I don't know who, like Mike Elko at Duke. I mean, it's just a matter of rebooting and having a vision after being around so long and in a lot of major programs, you know, going from Wake to Notre Dame to Texas A&M. You know, Duke has a ways forward.
I want to know why he took that job in the first place.
It's a good question. It's an opportunity. It's a good school, good part of the country to live in. I don't know. That's tough. If he just wanted that shot, if he was just sick of calling and running a defense and Duke, you know, if you turn Duke back into a bowl team, you can get a bigger job, right?
So yes. I don't know.
It's a springboard. But if he wasn't getting those sort of Big 12 SEC footprint type looks, then, you know, he just felt it was time and he felt confident enough that he could build a good enough defense. He built a good defense at Wake Forest. You know, they're difficult places to win and Duke is one of them. And so he has that experience in that part of the country. We'll see. Other jobs, other openings, other hire, you know, Dom Brown at UMass. Familiarity certainly there with what he did at UMass when they were an FCS school. Who else?
Jake Dickert at Wazoo.
Oh, Wazoo. Yeah. I think that's fascinating because he has looked at some lower levels for his assistant hires, which has been fascinating. He has what we think is a quarterback of the future. There's some talent on that defense. There's familiarity with an internal hire of a program, younger and without the, you know, years experience as a head coach. But I think the players really like playing for him and playing hard for him. The open question is what does that system look like? What is on both sides of the ball that you become, at the very least, a pain in the ass for everybody in the Pac-12.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, please do write in and let us know your thoughts on
Clay Helton, Georgia Southern,
or Joey McGuire, Texas Tech, or Mario to Miami, or Marcus Freeman to Notre Dame, or Billy Napier to Florida, Brent Venables, Lincoln Riley.
Brian Tell me again Cameron. How to pronounce the Louisiana hire.
DeZormo, like the jockey.
DeZormo.
Kent DeZormo? I think
Kent DeZormo.
Kentucky Derby or something.
I love the last name. I love the internal hire. I love the enthusiasm. I'm good with that hire.
Write in. Let us know your thoughts. SolidVerbal@gmail.com. Don't forget to go on out to YouTube as well. YouTube.com/TheSolidVerbal.
The.
That, of course, is where we post clips from the show. We're going to be posting more out there as well. So subscribe. Hit the bell so that you're notified whenever we post something new. Of course, subscribe, rate, review on Apple and Spotify if you haven't already. We appreciate your support. Verballers.com is where you can go for more information about the Patreon. And while it is still active, solidgiveaway.com. Compete/just get your name in the hat
yeah.
and ring to win that signed Desmond Howard mini helmet. We're going to pick the winner the day of the national championship game. That's all I got.
That's all I have.
For that guy all the way over there in beautiful, sunny Southern California, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand, back east. Thanks again for downloading, for listening, for playing along at home. We will be back on Friday. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.